Welcome back to the Sexual Healing Podcast, where we talk about life from a black gay perspective, from the top of your head to the bottom of your dusty, crusty feet. Now, folks, if you've not gotten your pedicure yet to take care of them talons you call toenails, now's the time. Nobody likes shredded sheets or incisions in their shins. I'm just saying. Get that together, all right? You want to be a blessing in them sheets, not a curse. All righty? Okay, so we are post-wedding at this point. My beautiful friends had a absolutely stunning wedding ceremony and a really, really cool wedding reception. It was great to share that experience with them and wish them all the best. And I'm keeping names out of it because of their professions. So, but yes, ladies, love you lots and wishing you just happiness beyond measure. Okay. Alrighty. So let's get into the show. I am your host, Dr. Pookie, and I'm not a big fashionista, but one of the things that happened over the weekend was the Met Gala, and this year's theme was camp. And so I thought I'd, you know, bring out a couple of the looks that I like the most or that were intriguing to me or just plain tragic. I'm going to give it all to you. So, I'm going to start with one of my faves, of course, Miss Serena Williams, or I guess I should call her Mrs. at this point, being a mother and a wife, but still a phenomenal dynamic woman who's a little problematic at times. She ain't off the hook, but I love her dearly. She came with a, looks like a November, fall, autumn leave number. I think a good theme song for her would be Rochelle Pharrell doing Autumn Leaves, which is an awesome rendition, I might add. So Serena definitely brought it in the yellow. I read in one headline where they said she chose comfort over style or over fashion. I think that the dress is actually a very nice color on her. It's a great contrast with the pink carpet and the roses in the background. I think she looks good. She looks fabulous. So, you know, I recognize shade is what is thrown often, but Serena looks good. You know, she doesn't always choose the best colors for her skin tone, but I think she looks fabulous here. I just love the browning leaves. She's like, you know, the fall goddess. And so I'm bringing her flowers as well as her leaves. All right, so up next we have one of you know, this woman has just been, I don't watch The Living Dead, so I didn't really get to know her in that context, but Danai Gurira is just, whew, as Okoye, she a bad bitch. I love her, you know, and in this ensemble she's rocking here, it's very understated, you know, it's monochrome, it's black, but it looks like a pantsuit. The girls are like out, but tastefully so. And they look good, I might add. She's all greased up nice, you know. I love the hair with the beads, you know, and the top hat and that train is just, oh, it's fabulous. Had she done a cape with this, it would have looked ridiculous. But I think having a skin out, it just, ooh, it, you know. I don't know if it's camp, but it's bad. Like, Danai is a bad girl. I just love her to pieces. So I was happy to see her turning a look. And speaking of turning a look, oh, Lord, these two. You know, I don't quite know what Kim was going for. She doesn't look bad. The titties look ridiculous. Like, they just got done a week or two ago. But, you know, I will give her props. She is painted. And the dress itself is, you know, it's an interesting dress. But Brother Kanye, he just said, fuck y'all, I'm just coming. You know, I have to wonder if they got into a fight in the car before they got there, which was a continuation of the fight at the house when he basically came out of the closet dressed like that. I just, Kanye, brother, what? Yeah, he just continued to say, fuck all of it. And, you know, okay. But, you know, given their history at the Met Gala, even though they're not my faves, I had to at least show a little bit of the craziness that they bring to the party because, yeah, they are an absolute mess. So, moving on, we had the infamous, Well, I won't call her infamous. That's not fair. We had Miss Katy Perry. Now, Katy rocked two different looks. On the pink carpet, she was giving you Chandelier. We'll call her Lumiere. Maybe she's Lumiere's side piece. She's all lit up like a candle. Very inventive look. The shoes, they go, but they jump out in bad ways. The coloring is off. And maybe it's because they're not lit up and everything around her torso is lit up. They may in fact be the same color or the same crystals, but the light is just making it look like the shoes are a mistake. But very inventive look. I love the headband that she's rocking there. Let me see. Okay, she had a little cap going. Had the blonde locks out. I'm like, okay, Katie. It was cute. It was cute. And I do love the lace, bodysuit or whatever's under there on your shoulders and, keep the decolletage in under control. Cute look. But the one that I really like from Katie is when at some sort of after party, Sister Girl put on this wonderful look and she said, "I don't know who's eating me, but somebody gonna eat me tonight." And I respect that. It's always good to get eaten. I'm just saying. Eaten, tossed, call it what you want. But she definitely was, looked like she has the same headband on from earlier. So she just stuck a toothpick in there. And she is rocking the burger look. And I appreciate that there are no onions on that burger. I don't like onions on my burger. All right, but she did have cheese on her burger, and the lettuce just looks strange. I know it's fabric. It has to be fabric because it's not, it doesn't look wet, it doesn't look, but it was a cute look. I thought it was a nice little touch of wacky and zany, and there was another photo of her in the burger outfit that had Lizzo in the background rocking her fabulous pink frock. And shout out to Miss Lizzo for the new album as well as the fun look. She definitely, made her curves just rock that look that she had. I wish I could find that, but I'll put it in the post editing. But yeah, Lizzo, looking fabulous, my sister, looking fabulous. Alrighty. Next up, we had the incomparable Lupita Nyong'o. Girl, it's interesting. The look works, and because it's Lupita, I'm not gonna come for her. But it does work. It's a very interesting look. I mean, she has a nude down low, so you can see her legs a little bit. She has, looks like at the knee, just above the knee, it goes opaque. The purse is adorable. I love the afro pics in the head. That's, it's like, and she made them gold. She was like, "This is royalty. I'm not just gonna give you a fro. I'm giving you a royal fro." And so, and she was like, "I'm angelic, so I got wings. Deal with it, bitches." Basically, she's like, "I'm gonna fly over all y'all hoes." That's what she basically was saying there. Up next was one of the ladies that I stand for, Miss Janelle Monae. Sister, I have never seen anybody work black and white like she does, and I appreciate that she's bringing in a touch of color. Not a lot of it. It's not like she's gonna show up in a fuchsia suit or something like that. She'll still give you black and white. But I love the fuchsia on the hip and, this whole face thing and the winking titty. Loved it. Because when I first saw it and it was just a still photograph, I said, okay, well, that's maybe avant-garde, Janelle. But then I realized, oh, okay. She's giving us an askew face and a profile, and it was lovely. And three hats. Again, is that three or four? I don't know. Oh no, that's a church hat with a couple of bolero hat maybe. Fabulous. That face, flawless. And again, the winking titty. I just loved it. I just howled when I saw that. And so, that's one of my girls. Janelle can do very little wrong. I won't give her perfection, but very little wrong that she can do. All right. And I don't know if Tessa was with her. Hopefully Tessa was with her. That'd be nice, see them out decked in campiness. But okay. Up next, this look with these two just understated from the front. The suits themselves aren't bad. They are just tough. I mean, it's giving you like slightly double-breasted, maybe. Yeah, they are double-breasted. And when I got the close-up view on them, I saw that there were song lyrics on them, particularly on his suit. And that, he is designer Kirby Jean Raymond, or could be Kirby Jean Raymond. I don't know. I'm not sure if he's from across the pond or if he's from Kentucky. I couldn't tell you. So that's two potential pronunciations of his name. But Miss Lena Waithe is stunning as usual. I love her with the close cropped blonde and his hair. He had the curly thing going. The beard was tight, unlike mine, because this shit is out of control. But I'm going to visit Danny soon. I'm gonna go see him. I am. Love his boots, red boots with a white suit. Damn, I wouldn't be bold enough to pull that off. And her boots are just bad. I love those. But the thing that really made their outfits just like jump off the chain was on the back of them. Like they were tough from the front. And I also love the fact that neither of them really, in none of the pictures I saw, were they smiling. They were just like, "We here." Not frowning, not snatched up, but just like, "Hey, how y'all doing? We here. Yeah, we here. We turning this shit." But on the back of Lena Waithe's, they both took the opportunity to make statements. Lena, on the back of her suit, said, "Black drag queens invented camp." She's like, "I'm just letting y'all hoes know, because all these white women rolling through here talking about I'm in camp. Just know that the black queens did it first." So we appreciate that, sister. Keeping it real. And on the back of Kirby's suit, it was really interesting because it was very much a black economic empowerment message. Let me see here. Fix your credit, pool your money, buy back the block. Which I think was probably an homage, possibly, to Nipsey Hussle. Certainly, that was something he was doing in the community not too far from where I live, up in South LA, or I guess they call it South Central LA, South LA. They changed the name to something, but yeah, all of that going down the area, but certainly great advice for us as a people. I'm definitely looking forward to being able to participate in that kind of cooperative economic power, because I think our community definitely needs it. It's one way to certainly stem the tide of gentrification, because as we saw in DC with the whole, the folks trying to turn the Howard University yard into like a dog park, that was some bullshit. And the queen that got snatched up on the news, he didn't disappeared from public life, so to speak, at least online. But he just really sounded very tone deaf, and just really that, he was that one. He was that kind of gay that a lot of people talk about. So hoping that in the future he can do better than what he is, what he showed in that case. But again, he has to figure that out. But okay, back to the Met. Up next, I enjoy her a great deal, Miss Cardi B. This shit is crazy. Like, this must be one of the dresses that weighed 22 pounds, 'cause they said that, this dress is just insane. And she looks fabulous, and her facial expressions and the poses, she looks. I just love that. Cardi is gonna give you a little taste to camp, and she's gonna turn it out. And it's just, it's she's yeah, she gives it to you, and I appreciate what she's serving up. It's a nice spicy dish. I had some more pictures of that. Yes, here we go. The one where she has the attendants holding it, and it basically almost looks like the wind is lifting her up, and she's like a sorceress. It's just bad. I saw that Miss Minaj was in attendance, and I'm guessing that they were able to keep those two separated, because I know it's on site, at least from Cardi's end, that she's gonna tap that ass. So it's always amazing to me that these ladies are in couture. And and that's the only time they're really ever together, and shit's about to jump off. So I love that, just that juxtaposition of these very refined, very high-end looks with, just we gonna take this shit to the streets, and I'm gonna beat your ass and snatch your weave out. It's just I love that juxtaposition. But I like a nice mess from time to time. I do, despite my intellectual capacities, I do love a good mess. Okay, and yeah, and then she had the one with the running behind her going up the stairs, and again that face, that pose, you know, just fabulous. So we give you your flowers. We can call her Firebird. Cardi Firebird B. That's what we'll call her. Okay, so you know, the pièce de résistance. Brother, you just. I don't know if you've been doing this. I don't know if you've been doing this, but damn. You know, the Oscars, the tuxedo dress, and now you come in with six men up on. You giving Queen of Sheba action here, Cleopatra. Turning it, love it. You know, the ensemble was just, it was very much over the top. And then when you got off, and them boots, my gosh, them boots, and the ensemble itself, it's like, I love the wings and all the different shades and the shapes and how they really mimic like an ant's, not an ant, oh goodness, a fly, sorry, a fly's wings and probably other, you know, flying creatures' wings with the, you can see the veins and all that stuff in them. Just stunning look. Initially, I didn't know who the hell it was though. Like, I didn't watch it live. You know, I don't have time for all that. But I did see it. See some of the photos, and I said, "Oh, Met Gala, okay." And then I was like, "Who the hell is this giving us like golden fly?" And then when I saw the photos of him with the entrance, I said, "Oh, I get it. Okay, goddess golden fly, love it, love it, love it." And just Billy, yeah, keep turning the looks, baby. I don't know if Christian Siriano did this one for you as well, but that's a lot of work you're wearing. A lot of work, and I wonder if those wings have any metal in them. They look like they, how the hell did they make those? But okay, you know, I'm not a designer, so I'm not supposed to know how it was made. Alrighty, so, you know, and also just giving a shout out to the, yeah, to all the other folks that came through, you know, there were some interesting looks. Sierra's look, you know, here, I loved it, you know, with the green looked fabulous on her skin. The fro is what caught my attention. Like, I love some big hair when you do it right, and this is definitely her doing it right. It just crowns her shoulders very nicely, and then you have the drapage in the upper back, and then you have the tail, which looks like it could be maybe peacock feathers. I'm looking at the iPad down low because, you know, I just can't remember all the details, but stunning look for her. I'm sure that, you know, she was able to, you know, talk to Russell and be like, "Baby, I need something nice, real nice," because, you know, you just got a check. And what a check it was. Happy for you, Dangerus. All right. So that concludes my wrap up of the Met Gala, and I will just leave you with a photo here of the incomparable. Oh, here she go. The one. Need we say more? Laverne, we speak your name. We see you, sister. Stay strong. All right. So now let's get into our main topic for the day. All righty. So, you know, the show is all about it's we're moving into health and wellness, honoring the name of the show, sexual healing. And you know, it has to be sexual because it includes me. I just love talking about sex and, you know, being all nice and profane and inappropriate in a lot of circles, you know, as folks like to call it. But today I want to talk with you about something that, you know, afflicts a lot of us, and that is perfectionism. I'm reading a book right now, titled Real Love, The Art of Mindful Connection by Sharon Salzberg. Uh-oh, the background is, there we go. Get the lighting right. Yeah, I still haven't gotten my light kit, so, you know, making it work. But it's called Real Love by Sharon Salzberg, The Art of Mindful Connection. It's a really interesting book. And you know, we're reading it because it's dealing with mindfulness and particularly as a meditation practice. And so one of the chapters in there was talking about perfectionism, and it like slapped me all up in my head because I am definitely a perfectionist. I believe I'm in recovery, but again, we talked about that inner critic last week on the committee. He speaks for the perfectionist as well, because he's always like, "Well, you didn't get this right," and it's like, "Yeah, I know, the shit wasn't perfect. Perhaps reality did not reflect the dream. We didn't get there. We fell a little short, but you know what? We got through it." So let's talk about perfectionism, and then we'll kind of bring it back to me and my craziness and experiences with it. So in her book, Salzberg defines perfectionism as a brittle state that generates a lot of anxiety because achieving and maintaining unwavering standards, whether they're internal or external, means we're always under threat. Now, for those of you in the gay community at large, and I would actually venture to say probably the LGBTQ community as a collective, perfectionism is always something that's hiding in the shadows. We're always, it's a lot of times it's about how you look, how you present yourself, what image you're giving off, whether it be to fit into some sort of social clique or social order, or to get you some tail. Let's keep it real. And so there's a lot of pressure around this idea of having the right look and being perfect in what you do and how you are portrayed. And Salzberg basically says that it's an illusion. The idea that you can actually achieve perfectionism and maintain it through superior self-control. And if you have the utmost self-control, that you can actually not only achieve but sustain perfectionism. And then have that perfect life that comes with it. And for a lot of folks in the community over the years that I've been out and hanging out, although it hasn't been a lot lately because I just can't deal. But we'll talk about that another show. Some of the ways that shows up is, there's definitely an obsession with having the perfect body. And not everyone in the community shares it, but certainly, if you look at our media, there are just certain images that are valued. There are certain images that are going to draw the crowd. And those images tend to be either buff or toned, usually slender, and typically white. So you have some folks of color that may be obsessed with adopting as much of whiteness as they possibly can, which certainly is a problem because, baby, you're never gonna be white. Okay? Some of us can also have this issue with our look. So it could be like skincare. I definitely put a little time in. It could be with keeping your hair cut. Not so much time in here. But also what you wear, your jewelry. Everything has to be current and on trend. And, keeping up with the Joneses in that way, it can be really destructive to your financial stability, which can then endanger everything else about you, because financial trouble, poverty is a mental health issue. There's a whole lot of shit that comes with poverty that folks don't always are not always aware of, not mindful of, or certainly don't give it its due. Poverty is a motherfucker, okay? Just keeping it real there. All right. So another thing, I remember watching this film called what was it? There were two. One of them was the Adonis Effect, and the other, I think, was it the Adonis Factor and then the Macho Factor? And they talked about, I just remember, porn star, Mark Williams. I remember this. He was already looks like he's in phenomenal shape, and he was saying, "Oh, well, I got to get in the gym and get it tight because it's Pride season, and I don't want to get caught slipping." And I'm sitting there looking at this man like, where are you slipping? Like, unless you're a professional bodybuilder, where the hell are you slipping? I don't understand. But you could see that urgency around getting what he believed to have the perfect muscular look, because he didn't want to miss out on any sex. He didn't want to miss out on any party invitations. And there was another guy as well that basically said, if you are built a certain way, you can have sex every day, multiple times a day if you want, because there's always going to be someone ready to lay down and toss it up to you. And so I just, and it's like it's not a false statement, but it just really hit me a certain way, and I'm not sure why. Because certainly I am not a walking muscle. This stuff is pitiful. Look at this. Sad. I mean, I see like a little cut there, but this shit ain't that serious. Okay? So, I break a lot of the rules. I've gotten to a point in my life now where I just don't care that much. I don't want to look fucked up. If I am going out with the queens, I will iron my shirt, but I'm not coming out my jeans or my jean shorts. Or even my cargo shorts, depending on what shorts get put on that day or what pants. There's probably gonna be some denim involved, maybe some corduroy, but I'm not dressing up. But I'm not gonna go out wrinkled and looking a damn fool either. So even there's that pressure. They talked about this idea of an unwavering standard, whether it comes from the inside or from the outside, where you're trying to conform. Perfectionism is a part of that. Okay. Now, the thing that can really help you to start breaking perfectionism's grip on you and it menacing your life is self-love, which basically means thinking of yourself first, loving yourself, flaws and all, just accepting who the hell you are. If you got a little belly, accept that belly. Now, if you want to lose the belly for health reasons or because you just want a flatter belly, then go ahead and do that. But don't make it the imperative of your life where you're like, okay, now that my belly's flat, it has to have, the little thing down the middle, and I want an 8-pack. That might be a little much, because that's a huge commitment. But obviously, if you're making that commitment, it's a diet, so you're going to be eating really well, which is really good for you. But beware the eating disorder with that kind of stuff, okay? But self-love allows you to give up this illusion of perfection and this idea that if you control yourself enough, and you control enough stuff around you, which you really, a lot of it you cannot control, but it gives you this idea, this illusion that you can control it. Self-love allows you to let go of that illusion and, more importantly, to build some resilience in yourself, which allows you the space when you encounter disappointment. So say you're caught in the throes of perfectionism, and you see this guy that you feel like you should approach because he has the look that everyone, and I'll look real good if I'm with him. And you approach him and he says no. You might be quite devastated by that. Even though you didn't really, really want him, intrinsically you didn't want him. That was peer pressure that inspired you to go up to that guy and talk to him. If you have resiliency and you have self-love, first of all, you might shoot your shot with the guy just to find out what's he about. But if he shoots you down or won't even talk to you, it's like, oh, okay, well, what's wrong with him? Because I'm actually a really cool person. That's what resiliency allows you to do. It allows you to face down disappointment and experience it simply as an experience that you can learn from and grow from. It doesn't tell you, oh, I'm a failure, oh, I'm ugly, oh, I'm fat, oh, I'm disgusting, oh, I'm this, oh, I'm that. It just allows you to be more objective in your assessment of yourself, but also of the community around you, the stuff happening around you. Because again, a lot of the stuff that's happening around you cannot control. But if you have that illusion, if you're embracing this idea of perfectionism, then you are under the mistaken impression that you can control it. And that's just going to make you crazy. It's just going to frustrate you more and more and more. And then you're going to keep pushing harder and harder and harder to reach this impossible standard. And the problem is, it's not your standard to reach. So, yeah, it's a lot. So, be good to yourself in that regard. Monitor what you're trying to do in your life. And really, just this idea of self-love, it allows you to embrace your faults, your flaws as you might see them, all those ways that you fall short of a prescribed image. Speaking for myself personally, As I said, I'm a recovering perfectionist. I think I might be in recovery, I don't know. It is like a drug in some regards. I mean, it's every day I have to decide, I'm good enough. I can do what I said I was going to do, and I'll be okay. And if I don't get to where I want to get to today, it's all right. God willing, tomorrow is on the table, okay? And that's kind of what I tell myself. And some days I fall short, and I'm okay with it. I can remind myself, hey, you did what you could. Stuff happened beyond your control. Perhaps you wanted to watch a little too much TV. Perhaps you got a little too caught up in this, and you said you were going to spend only an hour on this thing. You ended up spending three. This idea of resilience and learning and growing allows you to take all of that in and say, okay, well, you know what? I probably didn't need to do X, Y, and Z today. So in the future, I'll be mindful of this and really enforce what I need to do to get out of that spiral. So for myself, one of the things that I've often encountered, whether it's real or imagined, is what I like to call the black tax, where as a black person, I have to work twice as hard as other folks, particularly my white counterparts, to maybe be seen as half as good, or maybe as their equal. And sometimes that has been the case from the outside. Like, it's been communicated to me very clearly. Yeah, we don't know. Even though I'm walking in there with a PhD, yeah, we don't know. Okay. And there are other times where I put that pressure on myself because I feel like even though I'm not, I do feel a certain sense of responsibility to be a strong representative for my people because there are so few of us walking into some of those spaces, whether it be walking in a room as a PhD, talking to a corporate board, or, having a meeting with the CEO. I just feel like there's not a lot of room for me to make mistakes and have missteps and have unanswered questions. And so I'm sure that my counterparts walk into the same meetings without those concerns. I mean, well, no, I can't say they don't have concerns. We all have our anxieties about stuff. But it's not, it, it when I've talked to, I'll put it this way, when I've talked to my counterparts about this, they have basically said, well, yeah, I did what I could, and I just figured it was all going to work out. Whereas I approach it as like, oh, I have no room for mistakes here. If I fuck this up, I'm done. And so that's part of that black tax. And I found that it was basically another word for perfectionism, and it really did its part to drive me crazy sometimes. I would work so hard to maintain this illusion of competence. I came over the years, I've come to the realization that in a lot of cases, my C effort is other people's A effort, or it may even exceed other folks' A effort. And for a long time, I felt like saying that would be really quite arrogant on my part, but it's been borne out by the facts. It's been borne out by what I've seen, because I've seen mediocrity be celebrated and my excellence just be kind of like, oh yeah, because it was expected and no longer appreciated. Whereas other folks that were fuck ups and still were able to keep their jobs, their mediocrity was celebrated because they finally did something, even though they half-ass did it. So for me, it just created this drive to make sure that I look like I know what the hell I'm doing because, I am a doctor. I'm supposed to have all the answers, right? I'm at the top of my educational ladder. So I'm supposed to know stuff. And it's like, I'm supposed to know what I know. That's the reality. I know what I know. I don't know everything. I'm never going to know everything. I can know a lot of things, but I'm never going to know everything. But I hold myself to that standard. And one example of that is I used to do Well, I still do a lot of presentations to the community because I do some work in public health, community health, and all the various names that it has. But I basically work with professional health agencies, hospitals, and the like, and I consult with them. And I'm usually telling their story. Like, they had this initiative, and this is how it worked out. And one of the big parts of my job is presenting very complex information to the community. So I have to take statistics that sometimes are like way over the heads of folks and break it down to a level where my grandmama can understand it. And I have given stuff to my grandmother, said, Nana, this makes sense. But I also have to do it through a translator sometimes. So I'm talking to Abuelita that, may have gotten a third or fourth grade education, but she is on top of everything. And Abuelita needs her information. And it's my job to make sure that she gets the information she needs. And so I've gone into presentations putting in 8, 10, 12 hours on something that should have taken 3 or 4. I've given a presentation. I've heard it in my head how I want it to work out. And I've fallen short of that. The things have gotten jumbled. It's even happened on the podcast. I'm just, I used to say to my old co-host, I was like, that was not a very good show. And he was like, what are you talking about? It's like, it just did not, it went off the rails. And he's like, what rails? He's like, did we have a track that I wasn't aware of? I said, well, I had one. He's like, well, I, he's like, how are we supposed to stay on the rails if I didn't even know what the rails were? And that's the part of crazy. So I would do presentations, facilitate workshops, you name it, and really just kind of poo-poo them, be like, oh God, that was awful. I really fell short today. Yet my audience would walk up to me and say, like, thank you, that was really helpful. I've never heard it explained that way. I really get it. And I'm just like, oh, okay. And I used to think once upon a time, I dismissed it. So this is part of my growth. I dismissed their assessment of my work and said, no, that was some bullshit. Okay? You laid out some bullshit and they just didn't know it was bullshit. Which is really, now that's arrogant on my part, but that's what perfectionism might do to you. It distorts reality. It is a distortion. Perfection does not exist. It just doesn't. And so over time, their assessments, because they are my audience, their feedback matters because that's, I'm supposed to be teaching them and sharing information. Over the years, their feedback started to penetrate, and I remember, and I'd be sitting there like, okay, I just forgot to say this, and I was supposed to phrase this that way, and I didn't, and damn it, and shit, so-and-so's gonna call me talking crazy. And I never get those phone calls of anyone talking crazy. I've never gotten a phone call like, hey, what the hell was wrong with you today? You were not on your game. I felt like I was off my game many a day, but the people I was speaking to didn't. They never thought I was off my game. And so over the years, I've started to kind of believe them and maybe disbelieve the inner critic and perfectionists inside. I'm my own worst critic. Always have been. I hope to not always will be, but for now, yeah, that's the case. But what I've been able to do over the years is to build that resilience in myself such that if stuff is not perfect, if it does not work out, if it just collapses, it's like, okay, well, it is what it is. That's what happened. This is a situation. It's not an identification. It doesn't represent me, the failure. I realized in working with my clients and with the community, that my job in presenting to them was not to project an image of perfection, which is what I was trying to do. Rather, my job was to connect with them so they would be open to what I had to share with them. And I generally achieved that goal every time, based on the feedback I received. And so this idea of pursuing perfection, I really want to caution you about going on a journey. It's a tough journey, and you're never going to get to where you want to go. So I'll close it out there, but definitely, continue to be gentle with yourself. Recognize that the outcomes of whatever you try are just that, they're outcomes. And if you fell short, learn from that. What did I do? What could I do differently? Not even what did I do wrong, what could I do differently? And I did notice so and so, but I misinterpreted that. Let me interpret it this way and then act. Okay? Give yourself some space to actually learn and to grow and to figure stuff out. That includes figuring out your way in whatever communities and peer groups you happen to be in, figuring out your way through college, figuring out your way through grad school, because I can tell you, that mess, it will trigger and push and pull you in ways that you can't even imagine. It's hard to explain to people. I struggle to explain it. But those of us that have been through a doctoral program, maybe a master's program, because some of those are pretty rough as well, they get it. And it's hard to explain. I've tried to explain to my students, like, hey, they're like, oh, I want to go. And I'm like, girl, this ain't for you. Or I'll ask them, why do you want to go? Like, some of them, I know they have it. They'll be fine. But the ones that are borderline, I'm like, why do you need to go? What do you plan to do with that? Because this ain't just something you go do. They're going to drum you out. At some point, they're going to try to put your ass out of there. Either because you didn't cut it or somebody don't like you. As fucked up as that is, that's what it is sometimes. I'm not saying it's always going to be that way, but sometimes it be that way. So you got to know why. Be in touch with your why. And when you're chasing perfectionism, ask yourself why. Keep asking yourself why, because you're going to realize that the answer you're giving yourself is not good enough. And at that point, you got to start asking yourself, well, who am I? What do I want? What do I value? Okay. So I'm going to conclude the lecture again for a second time. Be good to yourself. Be gentle with yourself. Okay. You're not perfect. Embrace your imperfections. They are your tools to build with. So I'm going to take a short break and we'll be back with our listener letters. Plus, I need a drink. I keep forgetting to bring my drink. Jelly, 'cause jam don't shake. All right, Big Freedia, Queen Diva. Okay, I don't know how you get licensing for music, but we don't have a budget for that. But shout out to Big Freedia and RuPaul. I was listening to Peanut Butter this morning. She had me hollering, as usual. Okay, all righty. So let's get into our listener letters. Up first, we have. Oh, I didn't give him a name. We will call him Robert. Okay. Oh, it is he. Yes. Okay. Robert says, I have a crush on my professor. He fine. I mean, real fine. I like how I read that. I want to holler at him. We're both adults, so I don't see a problem. I know that my lust is probably clouding my judgment, so what am I missing here? Okay, so Robert, I understand. I've come across some fine ass professors as well. In my department, not in my department, teaching my class, not teaching my class. In the gym, shower. I've come across some fine ass professors. I have. And there is an issue that you're overlooking here. The first is you could cost your professor their job. That's the first thing. Some universities, colleges have strict policies about this. You may not fraternize with students. Some of them, it still happens, but they're not, it's not a really repressive culture around it. Sometimes the unspoken rules are not with your actual students. So if it's your grad student or, your research aid or, assistants, nobody that close to you. Okay. I think the thing you need to recognize in this, yes, you both are adults, but there is potentially a big power differential in your relationship, such that he's likely older, likely makes more money than you, certainly has more authority and pull at the university than you do. And, it just, if the relationship goes bad because you possibly engage in some fuckboy behavior and word gets out amongst the faculty, it doesn't even have to be exactly what you've done per se, in or the context in which you've done it, just the fact that, oh yeah, Robert, yeah, he's a very shady character, he did X, Y, and Z. Folks can just say that and not give a context. You may have done X, Y, and Z because you walked into his house and saw him fucking another student over the couch. And y'all had negotiated, you were at least gonna get an invitation. Because relationships take on a lot of forms. So, Robert, I definitely would say you're clouded by, by the dick or by the pussy. I don't know which one. They both can blind. They both can spellbind. But yeah, think about, the impact this professor could have on your academic career. If they're in your department, don't do it. Don't do it. If and I'll potentially if they're in your college, don't do it. Just, if you're an engineering major, maybe you mess around with an art professor. Two different colleges. But you don't try not to be in an electrical engineering program and you fucking one of the chemical engineering professors. That's too close. That's too close. Even if he never teaches a class that you take, it's too close. Don't shit where you eat. Okay? And right now in college, you eating there. You getting your food. All right? So, and I mean, I could certainly, there are relationships that I'm aware of. I know one of the schools I attended, there was a professor and a student who were actually in a master-slave relationship, which was fascinating. Not so much that they were in a relationship, but the fact that they were professor and student, and the student was actually the master. That's what was interesting. So it's possible, but it's going to take a lot of really clear communication and boundaries. Gotta have boundaries on this, okay? Alrighty. So Robert, wishing you the best on that. Be sure to update us. Let us know whether you make that move or you just let it go. Because I know you'd probably be looking nice in a little old, them slacks, checking out that onion. But I'm gonna leave you alone. Okay. Up next, we have Johnny. Johnny is having some issues. Oh yes, that's what he had. Okay, so Johnny has issues. He says whenever I go out to the bars or a club, I want to meet guys, but I'm really shy. I usually stand on the wall with a drink and think really shitty things about myself because I always chicken out. I don't know what to do to change this. Please help because I'm lonely and horny. Baby, understood. All right. So I too am pretty shy, which makes me sitting on YouTube talking about stuff kind of crazy, but as I've been told by my mother many times, don't be stingy with your talents. So apparently I have some sort of talent for doing this, so here I am doing it, despite the discomfort it may cause. I'm not very big on, I don't think I'm a Mac at all. Like, I don't have game. In my mind, I don't have game. I don't have any clever lines. I don't have, yeah, there's nothing really where, like, I don't have a go-to where it's like clever and, okay, we having some lighting issues here. Sorry. Okay. A little flaw in the program. All right. And I'm just going to embrace it. Okay. Yeah, I don't feel like I have game. I'm not a Mac. A lot of my peers back in the day, they used to be talking to the girls and they roll up on them. Hey, baby, how you doing? Let me get that for you. But, and I, it's like I didn't have any of that. Over time, certainly with maturation, I just realized, you know what? They're not getting when you first meet someone, you're dating their representative, you're meeting their representative. I just chose to be a little more upfront about it. And I just remember there was this guy at a club one night, and he was working my nerves from across the room. Like I had to have a piece of all that tall, thick, dark chocolateness, and it was a lot. And I said, "Ooh," and so I was just like, "Ooh, I need to go talk to him." I was like, "I don't know what I'm gonna say to him now." And I said, and I was like, "Ooh," and I'm sitting there having the same conversation you are, Johnny. Like, damn it, why you always gotta punk out? Don't bitch out. Be strong. Be a man with your shit, right? All this toxic crap. That I'm saying to myself. And I said, "Well, what would I want this guy to know if I approached him?" And I basically said, "I'd want him to know my name, and I'd want him to know that I'm interested in having a conversation with him, getting to know something about him." And so I pulled all my big boy draws together that I could summon, and I went across this room, and Earth, Wind & Fire was playing. I guess it was disco night, which I appreciated because the music was bumping. And they had his Earth, Wind & Fire, Boogie Wonderland is on, and I walk across the bar. And my drink is empty, it's just ice, melting ice, and I walk up to him like, "Hi, my name is, what you drinking? Okay, might get you another one of those so we can chat." And he was like, "Okay," he kind of sized me up like, "Okay." Now, he did pass me off to his friend, who I didn't want to be bothered with. Another story altogether. I was passed off to the friend, but that has been my life. And I encountered him a couple of years later, and I was kind of like, "Do you remember me?" I don't know if he remembered me, but he did. And I said, "Oh yeah," I was like, I was like, "It was hard to come up on you because I didn't have any game." I was like, I was like terrified. He's like, "Really?" He's like, "'Cause you walk up to me like, 'Hey, my name is, and can I get you a drink?" And I said, "Well, what else was I gonna say?" He's like, "What else did you need to say?" He's like, "That was quite bold." He's like, "No one's ever done that to me before." And I said, "No one?" And he told me, he's like, "Everybody comes with a line." He's like, "At least you came with something where," I'm like, "Okay, well, yeah, my drink is getting a little low. And, I told you, yeah, we could refresh our drinks together. You didn't have to buy me a drink," which was cool because he made about five times more than me at the time, But I was shooting my shot, as they say. And it didn't work out, but met a really interesting guy. Met a guy. If I saw him again, I'm gonna be like, "Hey, let's go catch so and so. I know you like to do this." Now, I'm not trying to date him at this point because he made it very clear that I'm not the one. Maybe I wasn't the one at the time, but I wasn't the one. But he was still fine. He was still real fine. And I was so sad because I saw myself climbing that man, but okay. Back on the point. So, Johnny, what I would say is understand who you are. Most importantly, what you bring. It's not, you're not bringing a big dick, you're not bringing this, you're not, no, you are bringing some strength of character. If you are a man of integrity, you're bringing that. You're bringing some sort of intelligence, your interests, possibly a kind heart, a big heart. That stuff still matters. It may not seem to matter much in the club and the meat market that it can be at times, but that stuff's really valuable. And if you approach the right guy, he'll value it as well. And all you have to say is, "Hi, my name is Johnny. Can I chat with you for a bit?" "Okay. I see your drink's a little empty. You want to get a refill? Are you all right?" "Okay." 'Cause now you're on the up and up. You're not coming with game. You're showing concern for the guy, but it's just basic conversation. You're not even eyeballing him. Now, you could be crotch watching. I respect a crotch watch. But you may not actually be doing that. You're just having a very topical conversation where you're practicing social graces. Now, if he says, oh, yeah, we can talk, or, you know, initially he was like, but then, you know, you're showing some concern for him because his drink is a little dry looking, he might be like, okay, this might be an all right guy. And next thing you know, you're talking, and then later on, you could be busting slob in the corner in the back of the club. Talking about my place or yours, if that's what you want to do, because I know you're lonely and horny. So, at the very least, what I do is, when I'm going out to the club, which is rare, once a year, maybe twice, once a year, if that. And I basically set the goal of meeting and interacting with one guy. Just one. I might have this vision in my head, if I'm gonna go in there and I'm gonna be the life of the party, I'm gonna be dancing and cutting up, I ain't gonna do that shit. That's just not me. At least not in a group of strangers. Like, that should be the place where you could do it. Because you don't want to do it in front of people that know you. You know, because just in case you're out of control. You know, I just think about, like, my sister's wedding reception. You know, I'm sure I embarrassed the hell out of my grandmother there. But she all right. She been around. She's seen plenty. So, I didn't say anything that was completely foreign. But I can do that in that space where I'm known and it's safer. I could see it being harder to do it in public, but you do get the opportunity to kind of reinvent yourself with strangers. It's an opportunity. So every time you approach a guy and maybe you get shot down, okay, what could I have said differently? What could I have done? What was going on in my body language? Did he catch me looking at his crotch? You know, if I did get a chance to hug him, did I get a little too low, or did I not go low enough on the back? All these different things that are happening. You know, that's why I say you set a goal of one guy. You just want to talk to one person and see what's going on. And then, you know, that might be enough for you. And then there might be somebody else that's now going to want to talk to you because they saw you talking to this guy for a while. Because you're on the hunt, and damn sure believe you are the prey of somebody else up in there that night as well. You might not know who he is. You might not even spot him. But somebody's preying on your ass. And I don't care what you look like. Somebody preying on you. Okay? So you just got to make yourself available. Make yourself look approachable, because even the most aggressive guy that's approaching you is still a little nervous about getting shot down. Or just like your regular guy is going to be nervous about getting shot down. It takes a lot of guts to walk up to somebody you don't know in a space where other people can see the spectacle of you getting shot down. Because some of these folks take their opportunity to say no as an opportunity to be a real pain in the ass and a real dick about it. Sadly. You know, and some of them are just like, no, you're not. I'm not really interested. Oh, no, I'm really not here for that tonight. You know, some are cool with it. You know, some will be like, he's like, yeah, you're totally, like I said, this one kid, he walked up to me and he was like, what up, Pops? And I was like, Pops, you know, just like, and he was like, yeah, what's up, Daddy? I said, oh, hell no. I was like, I'm looking for Daddy. I ain't trying to have a son. You know, and I was like, but you a cute little thing. You got some spunk. What's your name? And we ended up talking, having a good time. He was hilarious. But he approached me. It was totally not my type. And I was like, when did I become a daddy? But I mean, I got white hair growing out my face. So there is that. But yeah, just, you know, be open to what happens. And if you get shot down, you got shot down. It may not have anything to do with you. Might be them. Just because they look good or look desirable to you does not mean they're perfect, does not mean their lives are together. They could be as fucked up as the next person. Because that's the other thing I'll say. Just because someone looks like they may physically be out of your league does not mean that they are. You may be the very thing they're looking for. Now choose wisely. You don't necessarily want to marry community dick or community pussy. I'm just saying. You know, every time you go somewhere, four or five people in there done fucked your man. I'm just saying. That's not exactly a way to start things, but you know, hoes need love too. And it takes a certain type of man or woman that can actually be in a deep, intimate relationship with, a form of community peace. That person is not concerned about who you slept with before, because you and me. You going home with me, and I'll cut a bitch if they try to, get in the way of that. Okay? That's that person. So I'll just say that no one's out of your league. I think we talked about that in a previous episode. And don't take it so seriously. Have fun with it. Okay. So I see I'm at an hour now, so I'm gonna go ahead and move forward to our last letter for the day. This one is from, oh, I didn't give any of y'all names. I'm slipping. Okay, this person is going to be, I already did DeAndre. I need a name. This is why you have a co-host. You have a name, a source of names. Okay, this is going to be Jeremiah. Okay, Jeremiah says, "Hey, Dr. Pookie, I'm thinking about coming out to my teammates, but I'm terrified. They seem like cool enough guys, and the locker room talk is actually not completely terrible." Well, that's a good thing, I guess. They talk about women a lot, but make very few gay jokes. How should I go about coming out to them? Normally, I wouldn't bother coming out, but the stress of keeping this from them and living in the closet is affecting my performance on the field. I'm getting lost in my head and making dumb mistakes. I feel like coming out will kill a lot of this bullshit and get my head back in the game. What do you think, Jeremiah? Okay, so Jeremiah, I kind of agree with you. It's a big risk on your part. But part of being a good teammate is bringing your best to the field. And while you do run the risk of being ostracized, of being, bullied, picked on, all these other things, you have to weigh that with the freedom that you believe you'll achieve by coming out. If it seems to you like your teammates shouldn't have a big problem, because certainly most male locker rooms get around to the gay jokes. They just do. And you got these guys, just saying really foul, crazy, crazy shit that they probably wouldn't say to a guy in his face. And some of them would, but not all of them. They wouldn't even tell those jokes in another context. But if it seems like it's a safe enough space for you to do that, go ahead and do it. I don't know how old you are. You don't say. I mean, you could be 13. I don't know. You could be 20. I have no idea. You could be in your 40s in a neighborhood softball team. I don't know, but I would say more than anything, it's your life. Part of your job of being on this earth is to pursue happiness, and fulfill your purpose. If your purpose right now is being a good teammate and bringing your best to the field, and supporting your teammates, and you're not able to do that because you're dealing with coming out, then you need to go and come on out. There could be consequences, really bad ones. And that's why I'm always kind of hesitant to say come out. But come out when you're ready. You may want to, if the coach is kind of cool and you want to tell him or her first, then you could do that and then share it with the team. If you, like, say you get the game ball, or you do like a really awesome job in a game, and you get a chance to give a speech. That might be a good time to do it, and just say, you guys are my teammates. I love you. And really, me performing this well is not just about me. It's about the camaraderie on this team, and the support that I receive. And by the way, I just feel like I should say this because I feel like it's been kind of getting in the way. I just want you guys to know that, first of all, I'm gay. Okay, so that means I like men. I'm much happier now that I've said it, by the way, so I'll say I'm gay as well. The second thing, I don't want none of y'all. It's like, you know, if you don't want, make it clear, you know, because there's going to be that one asshole that's like, oh, I don't know. I don't, you know, just like, no, I don't want none of y'all. Y'all are my brothers. That's gross. Okay. And, you know, if you have some questions or if you just want to talk with me about this, check on me. How am I doing? Whatever it may be, I'm here. Y'all got my number. You'll see me. I'll be here tomorrow. So now I'm going to take a shower because I stank. And, you know, yeah, just lay it out. But I think, you know, sometimes if you, you know, read the room, you'll know whether you need to say, I don't, none of y'all are interesting to me. You'll know whether you need to say all that. But read the room, have fun with it. These are your brothers. This is how you, I might be overstating it, but you seem to have a good camaraderie with them and you call them cool enough guys. So you're a team, you know, by staying in the closet and the way it's impacting you, you're kind of separating yourself from the team. So you need to get back in there. Okay. And, you know, if they're good guys, they may have earned the privilege of truly knowing who you are, the full extent of who you are. Because I think sometimes when we think about not coming out, we feel like we're protecting ourselves and keeping a secret, which in a lot of cases we are. But the other side of it is you're depriving people of the opportunity to know you fully. We all have sides to ourselves that are just not shared all the time. But if they're talking about the girls they're dating and all that, you know, maybe it's not a situation where you can talk about the guys you're dating, but maybe it is. They might be totally cool. You won't know. But if staying in the closet is compromising your ability to perform and you don't want to quit the team, something got to give. So, Jeremiah, I'm certainly hoping that you're able to resolve this, and I'm definitely wishing you the very best there, because it can be tough. I recognize that. This can be real tough. So, you know, keep us updated on that. I look forward to hearing from you again. And I believe that concludes our letters for this week. Yeah, so if you have a question that you want to have answered or just something you want to maybe talk with me about, reach out. Is that my shirt all wet? Lord, I'm just, goodness. Okay. oh my gosh. I'm a sweaty ass mess in here. Okay, it's a little warm in this room today. I had to close up the house because they were doing construction like right next door. It was just loud. So I had to wait them out before I could even record because it was just sawing and banging and power tools. It was ridiculous. And, you know, folks fighting as well. The neighbors, they didn't choose well. Y'all, marriage is not a game. Choose better. Choose well. That's all I will say. Okay, so if you have something you want to talk with Dr. Pookie about, you can email the show at sexualhealingpod. Should be on the bottom of the screen here. I can never get these arms in the screen worked out. Should be on the screen here. You can also reach out to me on Twitter if you're not a big email fan. You can actually DM the show at podsexual. Or you can reach out to me directly on my account at Dr. Pookie. Again, should be down there on the bottom of the screen. But I'll spell it for the podcast listeners. It's DOCTORPOUQUIE. That's all one word. So, so reach out there or podsexual, PODSEXUAL. And you can also reach out on the gram. I still haven't posted anything. I'm raggedy. I'll own that. I'm raggedy. But I'm going to get to it. I really am. That's my intention. Now, if I fall short of that, or I have a vision for what I want it to look like, and it don't look like that, I'm going to make it look halfway decent and get it out anyway. Just like I deal with this issue with my head and the background. It does a good job, but it struggles around my beard because it's multicolor. So it looks like my head is shrinking and going away. But again, embracing imperfection, because my job here is not to be perfect. It's to connect with you as listeners and share what it is I'm feeling compelled to share. And if it's meant for you, then I'm happy you're receiving it. Okay. So we're also on Facebook. I think you search for Sexual Healing Podcast colon from top to bottom. You should find us in some shape or form. We're there. I've been really lax with the promotion lately. I got to do a better job with that. But it can be tough just to record some weeks. So, give me time. I'm trying to build a new machine here. All righty. So I believe that concludes what I have to share for today. Once again, you're not perfect. You'll never be. But you know what? You're good enough. You are just fine as you are. Just grow and step into your destiny. All right. So as I like to say, be a blessing out there and not a curse in the world. Okay, be the change you want to see in the world. If you feel a little social justice popping up in your soul, go do that. But definitely be all that you can be and that you were meant to be. And you set the table. All right, this is Dr. Pookie signing out. Hope today was healing. And we had a little bit of sex today. Not a ton, but a little bit of sex. Let me get that on so you can see it better. A little bit of sex, not a lot. Okay. Y'all be good. Take care.